No, no worries.
Welcome, everyone. We're going to get started. Thanks, everybody, for coming. I'm grateful to see so many people here, some new faces, some old faces. Thank you so much for coming and being a part of this. My name is Joshua Viss. I am the creative director, one of the founders of Still Processing. And I want to start with something we have not done before at Still Processing that I have thought about doing before. And I asked Anita about it yesterday, and she agreed that we should do it. And that is a land acknowledgement. You've probably heard them before many times, right? I don't have a specific way that I'm going to acknowledge the land this way today, except to say that, as far as I can tell, based on my research, we are on the lands of the Ottawa and Potawatomi tribes. I wasn't able to specify which one in this area would have been controlling it. But those are the people who were here long, long before any Europeans were here, okay? And we want to acknowledge them. Acknowledge that these people existed on this land, and also, I would say, acknowledge that this land was taken from them, right? In some ways, from our ancestors. And it's okay to just feel the responsibility and the weight of that, knowing that we can't fix it entirely. We can't fix what happened here. But we can acknowledge that these people were here and they made a great contribution to this land. I want to say something about Still Processing. I keep trying different ways of describing what Still Processing is, and I'm going to try one more time. This one's going to be a little bit simpler. And that is that we are an educational nonprofit. Kind of, period. That's what we do. We educate. It's what we're, at this point, most equipped to do. It doesn't mean that's the only thing we will ever do, because I also would like to do some action at some point. But we're not at that space yet as an organization. Maybe we won't get there. Maybe we'll just decide education is the thing that we do well. So we facilitate public conversations like the one you're going to hear today on big questions, purpose, meaning, truth, and on just relevant, contingent questions around culture, politics, nature, or Mother Earth, as Anita will refer, and well-being. Our conversations are guided by hospitality, honesty, humility, and hope. We value curiosity and kindness. And today, we'll be introduced to some new values to add to the mix. Values that Dr. Sanchez is bringing to us from Indigenous communities around the world. Lastly, I'll say this. We believe in a more loving, more just, and gentler world. We believe in that world, and we believe that world is actually still possible. And we want to do our part to make it so. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Anita Sanchez. She is Aztec and Toltec, am I saying that correct? But Aztec has another term here.
Nahua.
Thank you. Nahua. She is an international consultant, trainer, speaker for Fortune 500 corporations, NGOs, and a podcast host. Anita is passionate about leadership development, empowerment of women and men, cultural change, belonging, and inclusion. Her life's work is bridging Indigenous wisdom and science for business and societal renewal. She's the author of 7 books, including the one we will focus on today, the international award-winning book, The 4 Sacred Gifts, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times. Let's welcome Anita Sanchez. Is that on? Did I put it on? My bad. Let me do that. These mics have a lot of gremlins. Let's see what happens. I'm going to steal a question from an interviewer that I appreciate. This is, I don't remember her name. Who's the on being? Krista Tippett. She always asks this at the beginning of her interviews, and I think this is especially helpful today. with you because your religious and spiritual background of your childhood. That's the question. How would you describe the religious and spiritual background of your childhood? Is quite different from most of the people you see out here in front of you. And so I would love for you to just take a little time and tell us about the religious and spiritual background of your childhood.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Kansas City, Missouri is where I was born. So I love coming back to the Midwest, especially in the fall. It's quite lovely. And what I want to say, I'll start with the spiritual and religion can get mixed up, but which is okay. But I would say spiritually, how I was brought up was walking softer on the earth. My grandmother used to say that to me all the time. Walk on the earth like you're kissing your first mother. And that's how I was brought up. The trees, the grass, the birds, everything is sacred. Everything is sacred, but she'd add a little thing. And later my uncle's added a little thing, which is everything is sacred, but doesn't always operate in a sacred way. Okay? So that's the outlook, is that all my relations are everyone. Everyone. And rocks, and water, all the minerals, everything. So it makes it pretty easy when it's everything. Okay, I'm supposed to respect and hold that space of sacredness for everything. At the same time that I'm growing up with my elders, especially my maternal grandmother, who would do ceremonies in the backyard, and then the neighbors would make their fences taller, like, what was that crazy woman doing? And I'm so glad that that so-called crazy woman kept doing it, because a lot of my lessons learned was from her hands and how she taught us through nature. At the same time, I was brought up Catholic. So I always say I'm earth-based and Catholic. And I don't...
Did you say earth-based?
Earth-based.
And Catholic?
And Catholic.
Interesting
and,
distinction that I agree
yes,
with.
Yes. And so the Catholicism, the first, well, up until I was 16, I went to private school, to Catholic school. But I would always come home and question things and tell my mom, you know, why did they say George Washington is the father of my country? That makes no sense. And Uncle saw, and she'd say, Anita. She had a seventh grade education, but one of the most brightest people I've ever known. And she said, when you're out there, you answer the way they want you to. But when you come home, no, we can always talk about the truth. So already getting, like, there's some strange stuff going on here. It's not all wonderful. So on one hand, my early childhood was beautiful. I have 121st cousins, so there was always a wedding, a funeral, baptism, something every weekend. It was really wonderful. And at the same time, there was a dark secret. And that was, for 9 years of my life, I was abused. And that would be enough in growing up to deal with that. And I believe how I made it through was because of the teachings that I got from the indigenous side. And some of them I'll be talking to later today. And then that should be enough. However, when I was 13 in Kansas City, my father was murdered. It was race-related. He used to shovel coal for Sheffield Steel. And in the summer, he'd get even darker. So he's a dark-complected Mexican and indigenous person. And earlier that day, he didn't know. A black man and a white man had a fight. After work, he went and sat in that chair, and the man returned, the white man, and shot 3 bullets through his head, and he was gone. And that was another big point in my journey about what is this about, and how come if everybody's sacred, why is this going on? And I just want to say the other thing, because I think it's very important. My parents purposely had us grow up in the middle of the black neighborhood. So we were on the east side of Kansas City. So everybody on the block was black except us. And that was the best immunization against the craziness that people say about black people. Because when they say things, I think, well, Mr. Smith has took us down to the Dairy Queen so we'd not get hurt crossing the street. And, you know, in and out of each other's homes. But the other part of that is that later when I talked to my parents and said, why don't, you know, we didn't learn Spanish, and why is this? And I was a good why person, and still am. And they said, well, it comes from a long period of time, but it really lives very strongly here. And what it is, my maternal grandfather left Mexico looking for a better place for them to live. He had just married my grandmother. He didn't know she was pregnant, and it was 9 years before he came back. But he sent letters. California, no, we can't come here. They hate us here. Utah, no, they hate us here. Arizona, no, they hate us here. Colorado, no, they hate us here. He ended up in Missouri, and he sent her a letter and said, well, they don't like us here either, but they hate blacks more than us, so we have a chance. And that is in 1900. So this, you know, this stuff is something else. And so I could be trilingual if I was taught all that, but I learned to forgive my parents. And the last thing I want to say on that, because there's always good and some difficult things, I was really upset that I could speak Spanish if they had taught me earlier. Instead, I speak this, my kids say, please, Mom, don't speak Spanish. You know, and... But when my aunt and her told me, they have scars on their knees. I miss both of them a lot. They've been gone for some time. Anyway, in answering my question, they just said, look at our knees. It was like, yeah, I see you both have these scars on your knees. Yes. Because in Kansas City, if you spoke Spanish at lunchtime, you knelt on open bottle caps on the playground to teach you not to speak that language. So I wanted to give you the picture of that. And one hand was absolutely wonderful childhood. On the other hand, the other. So it was very real. Like, very, very real.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I want to share this piece from your work, from Four Sacred Gifts, in which you give sort of what I think is a really broad, inclusive definition of what it means to be indigenous. I'm going to play that and then just kind of ask you to say a little bit about it.
Across many indigenous peoples and their tribes, they point to a common description rather than a single definition, and that is... A truly indigenous person is one who has intimate connection with Mother Earth and who embraces all human beings in order to get along with them. There is a respect for diversity, which is part of the circle of life. Pluralism is valued, so it does not matter what color you are, for there is no being better than or less than, no negative judgment. We are all connected. Indigenous peoples listen to not only their minds, but more importantly to their hearts, and to what Mother Earth is saying.
So I've heard you say in our conversations as well, often you'll say, people have forgotten. They've forgotten. And the reason I think that's connected to this definition is because this definition is broad enough to say, there are indigenous people in all of our ancestry in some way, right? And so there's an invitation here that I feel to say, like, that piece that you lived into, right, as a child in more concrete ways than obviously happened to me, but that there is something in me that can be remembered from indigenous wisdom. Am I?
Yes, no, that's really a critical thing. It's remembering. So what I was always taught is people aren't broken. They just forgot. And so it's no wonder we'll get into the prophecy that this book carry because it makes sense. But the circle, my grandfather, I'm not going to make it because I'll take the the mic away from my mouth. He would teach us. I remember at three, sitting on the floor, all of us kids, and I loved Harrington, my Uncle Lara. And he would put his hand in this circle, flat, not up and down, but flat. He said, to be a whole human being is to live in harmony with people, nature, and spirit. And if you do something bad to your cousin, and we put our heads like that, we didn't want to look at him, then you not only hurt your cousin, you hurt spirit and the earth and people. And then he would go around the whole circle. If you hurt spirit, if you spit in that beautiful lake, you not only hurt the earth, you hurt the people and spirit. And it just, everything was that. So it made it really simple. There was, well, some of the time, part of the time, you know. It was very, very clear. So when I went to school, I was kind of puzzled by everything people would say, you know. That. And it took me a while to realize, oh, they don't have. But yet, when my parents and them would talk about it, you're all indigenous. In my book, you will see, and I got a little pushback, but in my book, I talk about anthropologically, we're all indigenous. We all are. Because way back, you've just forgotten, maybe many of you. But it's there, and it's in you, because now we have epigenetics, we know a lot more. So that's there, and I don't want you to get sideswiped by somebody. Because what we call indigenous now are people who continued the teachings and the land. So there was a reason I start where I was born. That land, that water, the Missouri River, that is the place that I'm attached to, that I came from. I've lived in Colorado now for 52 years. However, in me is this the start, is that land and that water and that oxygen.
So you mentioned this story of talking to your mother about being in school and hearing that George Washington was the first leader and saying to her, that is not what I was taught, right? Which I think is this really interesting thing that we're struggling with in the United States, like right now, which is, what are the true narratives about our country? Right?
Yes.
What are the, are all the narratives valid, right? Or are, in my opinion, we're elevating very specific narratives about who we are, and we're trying to silence and suppress these other narratives. Since you mentioned that, I'm not going to play this clip, but I want to play this other clip from, this is Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah,
and he was in a conversation recently with Ezra Klein. Great conversation. I'd recommend it to everyone, both because I think Ezra Klein speaks for a lot of people. He doesn't come off quite as well as Ta-Nehisi Coates. He's getting a lot of criticism. I think some of it warranted, of course, but I also have some sympathy for him. But there's this piece here from Ta-Nehisi Coates, which I think gets at something that is also really real for you, but less real for me. So I want to play this for us.
Then let me flip that question actually a bit.
Mm.
Why are we losing?
We're losing because there are always moments when we lose.
See, that feels very fatalistic to me.
It doesn't feel fatalistic to me. It feels like the truth. I mean, and let me express what I mean. I'm Ta-Nehisi Coates. I'm the writer. I'm the individual, right? But I am part of something larger, and I've always felt myself as part of something larger. I have a tradition. I have ancestry. I have heritage. What that means is that I do whatever I do within the time that I have in my life, whatever time I'm gifted with. And much of what I do is built on what other people did before then. And then after that, I leave the struggle where I leave it. And then hopefully it's in a better place. Oftentimes it's not. That's the history, in fact. And then my progeny pick it up and they keep it going. I am descended from people who in their lifetime fought with all their might for the destruction of chattel slavery in this country. And they never saw it. They never saw it. In my personal belief system, they died in, you know, defeat and in darkness. You know? And so I guess the privilege that I draw out of this, the honor that I draw out of this, is not that things will necessarily be better in my lifetime, but that I will make the contribution that I am supposed to make. The fact of the matter is, as horrifying as, the killing of Charlie Kirk was, and as horrifying as the feeling is this moment that we are in, an era of political violence, and I don't want to sound flip here, political violence is the norm for the Black experience in this country. It just is. I don't even mean like the Malcolm X, Martin Luther King variety of it, right? Which is the norm too. You would be hard pressed to have a conversation with a Black person in this country that is a descendant of slavery and not have them be able to reach maybe right here or to tell you themselves, look, my uncle, my grandfather, my great grandfather, they lived in a small town in Mississippi, in Tennessee, in Alabama. They got into some sort of dispute with a white man and either they were lynched or we had to run. Political violence runs through us. It is our heritage. Is that good? No. Do we valorize it? Absolutely not. Do we minimize it? Absolutely not. But a life free of it is not a thing that's really in reach in my time.
So I just love to hear what resonates in there for you and what's different maybe. Yeah.
Well, it all resonates. So when he talks about the losing, because in the school books growing up, the books were always about us losing. And yet I was hearing some other stories. But I also know, like my mom said, if you want to get A's, you do what they say and come home and we can talk about the truth. So it was very practical. There are 575 indigenous groups in this country, in the U.S., there are another probably 50 or more who are unrecognized. And it causes a lot of battling even within. But part of that was constructed, as Ta-Nehisi Coates says, this was deliberate, taking people away from their families, not letting them speak their language. All of these things were intended to wipe out a people, many people, and their culture. So it's very important to me that when I make that hoop, there's a difference. I don't hear him. He might, but he wouldn't use this language. There's a term called Pachamama, and you've probably seen it, like in markets in the summer. It's usually fresh food that from farms people have brought, and maybe one of the names on there is Pachamama. And most people think it means Mother Earth, and that's not bad. That's great, especially with fresh food, like great gratitude. However, Pachamama is actually a Quechua word, so in the high Andes, and it means the sacred presence of the earth, sky, universe, and all time, and that's what I'm in. Spirit isn't in me.
Say those things again just for us. Just repeat.
Pachamama means the sacred presence of the earth, sky, universe, and all time. So when he talks about his ancestors, that's not just back then. They are still here. And lo and behold, scientists, especially quantum physicists, but also biologists, are starting to realize that actually makes sense. Because time isn't what we think it is. All of these different things that we were taught from the beginning, then told in school, don't answer that way. It's not right. And that would happen right to me right up to my PhD, where I got it back in the 80s, so it was a long time ago, and some things have changed. But when I was doing visionary leadership, it was 88 country sample leaders in different parts of the world. And when I put in a visionary leader like Black Elk or Chief Sitting Bull or different people, my committee said, what makes you think you can put this in the highest degree that you get in this country? Take it out. So there was my mother just in my ear going, Anita, it's your choice. She'd always say, it's your choice. What they did say, though, added on to that, was you take it out, we're going to give you your degree, and then you do whatever the hell you want afterwards. You take the truth, you take all of it. But still they were holding, they were gatekeepers on what that meant. And so that's just part of it. I know there's gatekeepers everywhere. And so that hoop, that oneness, that unity, that's forgotten. That's just forgotten, because we wouldn't treat the cows the way we do or the pigs or anything, or excavating beautiful lands and sacred sites. We wouldn't do it. So thank you. I love Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's turn to the prophecy, the vision, and then to the hoop and the gifts of the hoop, okay? I'm going to play this clip. This is your recounting of a vision that Don Coyes had. He's a Mohican, right? No. Am I getting that right?
I
said it wrong.
That's really bad to do, to say that. But Don Coyes is a... No, he is Mohican.
I did get it right. Thank goodness. Okay, here we go.
The Eagle Hoop Prophecy. The hoop is an evolving symbol for humanity, as its wisdom and presence reminds us of how to be and how to do. Don Coyes, Mohican elder and keeper of the hoop. In 1994, a vision came to a Mohican man as he slept in his house, tucked in the large pine trees on the edge of the Rocky Mountains. An eagle flew above his sleeping self, dropping a beam of light upon the man's head. This ray of light began to expand, reaching from the sky to the earth. Within the light, a very small sprout sprung forth, becoming a tree, growing through each of the four seasons, the spring, summer, fall, and winter. Then the leaves of this tree began to fall off, and then soon the branches began to fall off. What remained was a single stem of the tree, which rose up vertically and then turned horizontally, bending and forming itself into the perfect shape of a circle to represent the earth and the universe. When the circle or hoop was completed, a single dot of light formed in the sky, coming down to the hoop. The dot of light transformed into an eagle feather, attaching itself to the hoop. Then, more and more dots of light came from all the four directions, north, east, south, and west, becoming eagle feathers, attaching themselves to the hoop until there were 100 eagle feathers in all. When an indigenous person seeks guidance, being in right relation with their community, they will naturally seek out the wisdom of the elders, who are in communication with Spirit and Mother Earth. So with this dream, Don Coyes, Mohican messenger, and members from his Turtle clan, took this vision to 17 elders in South Dakota, who said, "You need to build that hoop." They saw this vision as a prophecy of the coming together of the human race. There is only one race, the human race.
So you were made aware of this vision about a year later, maybe, 1995. Mm-hmm. It's funny, there's a clip in here that I don't have time to play in terms of where you were in 1995, like emotionally and mentally, after the work you'd been doing. A lot of it, what we would now call DEI work, is what you were doing. When you came there, you were pretty down.
Yes.
Right? But then you learned, there was a ceremony, right, at this conference that you were at,
yeah.
And you learned about this vision from Don
yes.
Coyes.
And that's really what I want to share with you, because I am a messenger of the Eagle Hoop Prophecy, and that's my joy and my responsibility, my calling to spread this all over the world. That's part why I have a podcast where I interview elders from all over the world, not just U.S.-centric, just keep circling and getting this wisdom out, remembering it. And so I would like you to listen with the softest part of your ears and imagine your heart expanding. And if you wish, you can lower or close your eyes, and I'm going to present you the gifts. Spirit told them, as these 27 elders around the world gathered in Turtle Mountain, Chippewa, Spirit said, "All right, You've built this. Now there are four gifts that you must put in here, and that all the human beings, the two-leggeds, need to remember. And if they use these gifts, my promise is they will remember what it is to be in harmony with yourself, with other people, with nature, the earth, the universe. And so these are the gifts that they gave, and I've been using them since then. It really helped helped me a lot. And so the first gift, and I'd like you to take your hands and put them out and then bring the gift in to your heart. So the first gift is the gift of the power to forgive the unforgivable. Put that into the ceremonial part of your heart and breathe that in and breathe it out. And know that forgiving the unforgivable is a gift you have. And some of you might be thinking right now, oh yeah, I forgive that. I don't know if I can forgive this other thing though. Yeah, I'm not sure. But know that yes, this is one of your gifts. So take a deep breath and you can put your hands down and then back out again. The second gift they put in the hoop, Spirit told them, is the gift of the power of healing. Put that into the ceremonial part of your heart. And you all know where that is. The gift of healing. And maybe some of you think about things that have healed for you, gratitude. Some may have some things that they do, you, well, maybe I need to heal this. Some of it might be physical, psychological. But I'll say this gift is a powerful one. And when my kids were growing up, I used to, when I was around, I'd fix them breakfast and I would always say, oh, it's a good day to heal. And after a while, they just said, you know, no other mommy says that. I said, but it is a good day to heal. It's ongoing. We're evolving always. We have not arrived. Then go ahead and breathe that out, and you can take your hands. And the third gift that they put into the hoop for all humankind to create harmony and balance is the gift of unity. Take that gift and put that in the ceremonial part of your heart. Unity. Oh, a powerful theme that needs to be restored, remembered, all over the world. And that gift, again, you might be imagining unity, you might think, as you're holding your heart like, and it's expanding, oh, my family, or my chosen family, or my church, or my community, or my kids, on and on. And that's all great. And elders don't tell you what to do. We suggest. So in this gift of unity, if you don't see yourself as you put that in the ceremonial part of yourself, I suggest you consider putting your own image there. Are you in alignment, in unity between your spirit, your intellect, your emotional, and your physical? And if that's out of alignment, then there's internal unity work to do. So this isn't all about out there. Okay, you can just breathe that in. And then the last and final gift, that Spirit said, use these gifts, and the promise is you will remember. So the fourth gift is a gift of the power of hope. Hope in action. Take that gift and put that into the ceremonial part of your heart. And breathe it in and breathe it out. Hope. And maybe some of you are thinking about, well, I don't think I have too much hope right now. There's a lot of hopelessness going on. Or you may think, remember, oh, you know, I hope for that, and lo and behold, it's in my life. But know that hope is an energy source, and you get to choose to give it away or not. It is yours and one of your major gifts. So that hope is very, very important, all four of them. So you, if you did close your eyes, that you can open your eyes. You can put your hands wherever you want. You can leave them on your heart if you like. These four gifts, Spirit told those 27 elders, take these. These belong to all humanity to help them remember. You're in a bad way. You need to remember how to create harmony and balance with yourself, other people, and the whole earth, nature, everything. And so with that, they had a fire, and the fire was pretty much gone. And they started talking to each other.
Can I just fill in real quick?
Yeah.
This is a gathering that happened later.
In 1994.
And it was with 27 elders from around the world to talk about Don, you know, to discuss the interpretation of Don Cuyas's. Am I getting this sort of right?
They created the hoop.
They created the hoop. And then they are the ones who decided collectively which gifts should go in the hoop.
Spirit told them.
Thank you.
Spirit told them. That's very important. So as they were talking, they were excited because I'm going to take this back to Asia. I'm going to take this back to Africa, to my tribe. I'm going to take this. And the fire rose. And what they all felt and heard was, no, this prophecy, these gifts belong to everyone. To use, to gift, to create a world that's wanted of trust and harmony rather than greed and separation. And so they were sort of humbled and they left. And that prophecy is one that I am a messenger of and just delighted to bring to you.
So I want to go through the four gifts a little bit. Beginning with forgiving the unforgivable. It's interesting that it's not just the power of forgiveness, right? It could have been that, but it's not. It's forgiving the unforgivable, which I will admit is starting to feel like a very tangible thing that I'm going to have to work on based on what's happening in the country and the world. I have a quote here that I think is really interesting, but I want to let you say a little bit about your experience of forgiving the unforgivable.
Yeah.
Just okay. So people realize this is a very real, this gift is very real to you.
It's very real. It's very real. As I told you, from age 4 to 13, I was sexually abused. I kept it quiet. And then when I was 13, the murder of my father happens. So it was a difficult time for me, all mixed up and stuff. And especially difficult is because my father was my abuser. And I loved him. And he was harming me all the time. And so when I start using this forgiveness, we can start with little things so you can build that muscle. Oh, I forgot our anniversary. Oh, I forgot. But it's the unforgivable. And so I was able to forgive my father truly, truly. And the big piece, I'm teaching DEI, and I'm going into big corporations and creating circles of white people who share what they've been taught and their dreams, and circles of different people of color who share their how they were brought up. And what I was hearing week after week was white people, many white people say, yeah, I was brought up to know that I am better than you. And I love my parents. And I'm not my parents. And I'm trying to change. I'm changing policies. I'm changing who my friends are, who my kids meet. And after hearing that over and over again, a dream of mine changed. Because that the white woman of the wife of the man who murdered my father, this is a very important piece. She came the week after he died with her son, who was probably, I assume, was around my age, 13. And they knock on the door. My mom doesn't open the screen door, which she usually does. So something was going on. And this woman starts, Mrs. Sanchez, I had to come. I had to see you because I want you to know my husband who murdered your father, he's a good man. He never would have murdered your husband if he knew he was Mexican and Indian. And then, that was not enough, she started saying all these things about black people. Just horrible things. And my mom screamed at us at times, but I never heard my mom scream at a stranger. Only then. And she screamed out at her, stop! Stop! You don't even know what you're doing. You don't know what you're teaching your son. Now, I want you to know that you have to get off my porch, and I'm going to work really hard to pray for your soul. And she left. That image was left with me. So I'm out teaching DEI. What pattern in me was thinking about these white people? And as I dreamed that scenario over and over again, I could see everything. I could hear everything. I still can today, but I had lost the face of this boy. And so having gone in corporations and hearing this, all of a sudden the dream came and I could recognize him. And if I ran into him in an airport, even though it was many years later, I would know who he was. And I would want to talk to him. Because what was happening is I took away his humanity. That's what I was doing. Literally wiping off his face, thinking this is the only road he could go. And it's not. It's not. And so I was becoming exactly what I detested. And I don't want that. That's not me. That's not the sacred part of me. And so I forgave. I forgave all of that. But also I had to forgive myself. And sometimes that's harder to do. That means forgiving the unforgivable. It's not only your abuser or the person who murdered someone in your family or whatever thing it is. It's forgiving yourself for your participation in a way that is not truly you, the sacredness of you. So it's a powerful gift. I hope people use it. It's extraordinary.
I just wanted just to show this one part because I thought it was so interesting, because obviously forgiveness is hard, but forgiving the unforgivable is exceptionally harder. And I love this line about you can ask Mother Earth, Father Sky, your spirit guides, or another higher power to take the rest away, right? That there's that there are these entities in our lives that you're suggesting can help us heal these really difficult things that we're trying to forgive, right?
Yes.
And I don't have, I'll be honest, I don't have that vocabulary or that in my life, this ability to think that Mother Earth or Father Sky can help hold some of my pain, right?
Yeah.
And I just want to say that that's real to me, but
it's very foreign.
Yeah, it's very foreign, but I love it. I'm really attracted to this idea, and obviously it's a part of the interconnectedness and all that, but I think the other thing I like about it is it says, like, there are things in the natural world that want to help you.
Yes.
Right? That want to be there for you.
That's a big thing that I think is one of the things why I'm a messenger of this, is because of the human supremacy. People didn't learn that hoop flat, nothing's more than or less than anything else. And so that's what happens. But what you forget when you do that is we do nothing alone. Nothing. You're breathing right now. You're not doing it alone. Thank the plant relatives who take our carbon, turn it into oxygen. You couldn't even live. You couldn't breathe. You don't do it alone. And we are taught to think, pull yourself by your own bootstraps, all these things. You did that. You got this. And there's all those who came before, and not just two-leggeds, but all the land where you came from, the dreams that people before you, even if you don't know who they are, of the future and you. So, yes, they are there to help you. And I've seen it many times. I've experienced it. But I've seen it happen with people who did not have that belief, and they actually experienced it, which is very powerful.
I'm going to play one other clip just to lead us into a conversation of the challenge of unity right now. Another clip from Ta-Nehisi Coates and his interview with Ezra Klein.
Look, I have, just in terms of bridging gaps and everything, I have a basic level of respect that I accord to everybody. You know what I mean? I want to say what I have to say. I don't want to shrink back from it. You know what I mean? But I do think on a basic level, there's a respect that has to be had for people that I disagree with, right? At the same time, I recognize that part of my audience, and I would say an important part of my audience, is people who have never enjoyed that respect. You know what I mean? People who, in fact, are subjects of the kind of hate that Charlie Kirk was harvesting. And I can't ever, A, contribute to making them feel like they've been abandoned. And B, I can't ever stand by and watch somebody do that. And in the name of unity or whatever, act like that's not happening, because there are real consequences. And so it's like, when I read his words towards trans people, Jesus, when I read, you know what I mean, the language towards Haitians specifically, which was very, very, Haitians will become your masters if you don't elect Trump. I mean, this is very, very familiar to me. You know, it's this idea of Haitians coming into the country or immigrants raping your daughters. I mean, this was really, really, really dark stuff. It's at the core of this country. And so I feel like for Haitian immigrants that are in, you know, Ohio, who are living under the weight of this, for trans kids who, you know what I mean, are dealing with, you know, being, I don't even want to use the term bullied, beaten up, attacked, threatened. You know what I mean? It's very, very important to me, given the post I have, to say, I see you, but also this dude was wrong. And I'm all for unifying. I'm all for bridging gaps, but not at the expense of my neighbor's humanity. I just can't.
So it's a tough one. I know there's no easy answers here. And I know how important unity is, right? We haven't even touched on, and I'll just say the word, the climate crisis absolutely requires unity, possibly for the survival of the human race, right? The stakes really are that high. But I do find myself just struggling to find this balance between like my personal values and my desire for unity. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Thoughts?
No, my thought is there's lots of different ways to deal with unity. I don't know what that is. But
it's just a sneeze by somebody.
Oh, okay. It's just
come
echoing.
On, Jeff.
Anyway, yes. What was I about to say on unity? Dear, that happens sometimes now.
It does. Forget. It's all right. We know who to blame.
So no. It's not a No. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
The unity is real. Yes, I understand what you're saying, and my values, what's happening today, I'm just going to say it. Many MAGA, I don't know all MAGA people, but many who are speaking out, including our president, I could say a lot about that. What I'd rather do is talk about who I'm supporting and those entities that can help. Every morning, except I didn't today, every morning for 23 years, I get up and I watch the sunrise. I don't ask for anything. I just gratitude for being. And if I miss that, it's really tough, because it's reminding me that I'm the small part of this amazing universe. And I send light to Trump's soul. And
I think you told me once that like you tried to send love and that wasn't, you weren't able to.
No, I didn't send.
But light, you were able
but
to.
But light I was. Light to a soul. And how I make sense of it, there's a lot of forgetting that's going on. There's a lot of forgetting of a lot of things and our power and our impact on other people. And just this darkness. But I don't want to give my joy away. I don't want to, my values and stuff. So that's the only way I can find to speak of some people by sending light to their soul and really meaning it. I wish their soul well and that it gets remembered.
Yeah, I think I'm continually trying to remind myself of something. It's similar, I think, to what you're saying with the forgetting. It's something Valerie Kaur said, which is, I think she said, there are no monsters. She's a Sikh elder, I think she would say. There are no monsters in this world, only broken people. And I think when you say there are so many people forgetting, there are so many people don't remember, there's a similarity between what she's saying and what you're saying, right? We don't want to give up on these people, of course, right? But of course, as Coates is saying, and what I'm struggling with, is we don't want to give up on our values for the sake of unity.
And you don't have to. And I'm sure you brilliant people have so many other ways that you can do this. But it's basically asking, inviting that, which is in spirit world, and therefore your body's in spirit, and you can get your answers. And that is just so important at this time. Rather than saying, I'm hopeless, I can't do anything, that won't matter, this is going to go away in a couple of years. People are pretty hurting. And what's extraordinary is there's something they can do, but they've just forgotten. So this gift is really important.
Yeah. Let's look at hope.
Yeah.
So I have this line from your book that I really like. The collective journey, your journey and my journey, all matter. You can keep the fires of hope lit by embracing your dreams and encouraging your visions. You can ask for dreams that will keep the flames from going out, dreams that can last a lifetime. You can let old stories die so that new dreams can be born. There's so much that I love here. The embracing your dreams and encouraging your visions, I think that's huge. I think there's so little of that. It's so hard to do that in this. Maybe that's it. In this particular environment, it's really hard to embrace your dreams and encourage your visions, I think, is sort of what I'm feeling.
For many Indigenous people, it's not at all. So I have a dream that I started dreaming when I was 3 or 4. And I remember telling my grandmother, my mom, and it would keep coming up. And what the dream is I see the earth, and there's all these people, different sizes, different colors. And we have our hands on each other's heart. And so I was made fun of that when I went to kindergarten. They said, draw what you're going to be when you grow up. So I drew that. And I was the 25th kid. And I got up and said, here, there's millions of us. Here, have our hands on each other's heart. The kids laughed. The teacher said, put away your crayons. But something happened to that 5-year-old. I wasn't embarrassed. I remember my feet like went into the earth. My head was up in the sky. And I just like, this is what I'm going to be when I grow up. And I still share that dream in a lot of amazing places. And generally, there's always somebody there like, oh, you just made yourself not credible. You just did that. But then there's always somebody else who comes, thank you for sharing that dream because I have put it away. I had forgotten it, and you made me remind. You reminded me. So dream, dream, dream. Dream away. Daydream, night dream, dream. Because the dreaming that I'm talking about is the dreaming that pulls. A friend of mine says, pain pushes till vision pulls. And it's a lot easier in life if it's pulling you. And we deserve to have joy. That's what we're supposed to be.
Can I ask you one question going back to something? And then I have a little clip that I want to end with before we open up for questions. Don Coya says, the hoop is an evolving symbol for humanity. That I think I didn't see the evolving part when I first read your work. And that I just think is so interesting and important. Can you say what that means? Like, what evolution or what's possible in the evolution of a dream like this?
Yeah. Well, it's very powerful, obviously. I'm living it, but many people are. And that we can create that. We are, this comes with human supremacy too. So some people, and we've been taught to do this, I've arrived, I have a PhD, whatever it is, it doesn't matter, you know? Rather than, no, you didn't do any of this alone, thank you, and you can keep growing. And that, as Indigenous people, because we see nature as our relatives, is showing us all the time that you evolve. You get bigger, you die, you rest, you grow again, and it's evolving. So even to say some of these prophecies that are now starting to be told a lot more is a change, because Indigenous people were holding back on sharing these because we didn't think people would listen, that it wasn't relevant. But I say that with a little bit of forgetting, and so now there's quite a number of us, and in our ceremonies, we're sending light and much more to the people who are harming us.
So I want to end with this. It'll mention the gifts again, but it's just kind of an encouraging word for us to end on. And then I'll open it up for questions for those who have them.
We have the capacity and the opportunity, by virtue of simply being alive, to be conscious men and conscious women, aware that we are a precious part of a larger whole. We can choose to become aware, awake, and curious, to act as participants in the development of ourselves and in support of the harmonious development of our communities. The four gifts, the power to forgive the unforgivable, the power of unity, the power of healing, and the power of hope, are yours already. The invitation from the elders is always there for you to open. The gifts exist within each person and all around us. They are always ready for you to receive them. Simply begin wherever you are and whenever you are called. Come join your relations and be a life-giving connection to others.
Can you just say something about the come join your relations part? What does that mean to you?
To me, that's what makes me smile, is I realized I was smiling here. That's the part that lets you know your true self. So last year I was in North Carolina and I was teaching this course, and everybody was coming in and sitting down. It was voluntary, but they're coming in. And then this one man comes in, he looks at me and goes, oh no. And I raised my head, and he said, I don't think I can learn from you. You look like the people who clean my toilet. And I looked at him, and I said, I don't know if you can learn from me either, but you're welcome to stay and see what happens. When you're in unity with all these other beings, I'm not alone. I know that. And my ancestors, these plants, the earth, the sky, the stars, all of these things are there. And I'm part of it. Why would I want to forget? And then I'm able to face a lot of things that I didn't think I could and be more joyful than ever in my life. And that's what we're inviting you to do, is to have the joy in your life, to be curious, to be open to the connection, because it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. And the opposite doesn't look so good for you, for your children, your children's children, other species' children. So these are urgent times. Go slowly.
Questions? I'll come to you.
Stop, get off my porch are words of protection and accountability. I have a difficult time accepting the four gifts if I don't feel safe. Can you wave into these four gifts the ideas of protection and accountability?
Okay. So I understand you're saying that's really hard if you're not in a safe place. It's true. It is. But as an Indigenous person, and I know growing up with Black people, we're all taught the same thing. Who said it was going to be comfortable? Who said it was going to be safe? And so that was part of the truth-telling that my family, my elders would share. And in spite of that, you move forward. But you're not moving forward alone. You see, I know that I have all this support, even if there's nobody else there. Even if there's nobody, I know I have that support. So it's a shift. But the promise from spirit, and I've seen this now, I've been working on this and taking it to corporate America and nonprofit groups all over the world and stuff, is that as they use that, not one time, all of them, different times, but use them, they start integrating that and they go, wow, I just couldn't believe I did that. I feel lighter. I feel more joyful. No one's telling you you have to do this. I'm inviting you on behalf of Spirit and the elders to join, to become a whole human being, to know a joy that I don't know what to say. It's just so beautiful and big. Even in the face of the CRAP that we're in, okay?
Anybody else? Questions? I'm curious about go slowly.
Thank you, Dr. Sanchez. Very inspiring. It's a remarkable irony to me, as someone steeped in the Judeo-Christian tradition. The biblical vision at the very beginning, Genesis 1, Genesis 2, is one of shalom. It's the word I would use as a word that seems to align beautifully with what I hear from indigenous voices. We use the word shalom, this harmony, creation, spirit, people. Terribly fractured by the time you get to the third chapter, but this is what Creator intended. Shalom. The horrible irony to me is that in the name of the doctrine of discovery, the Christian church came from Europe declaring that it is our divine right to Christianize the lands and peoples that we conquer. And yet it is those very people we intend to conquer and suppress who hold the most radiant vision, the whole most holistic vision of shalom. And it's indigenous voices that I find most hopeful, much more so than I'm hearing from so many Christian voices today. It is indigenous voices like your own that keep us grounded, that keep me grounded in the truth of that vision of shalom, of that kind of harmony. That we should long for, hope for, work toward, live out of, give expression to. There's not a question there. It's just an observation that I make as I listen to you, and it's why it's so inspiring to hear you. So I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here and for sharing the gifts with us. We're grateful. It strikes me that language is a wonderful gift. It's unique to humans among all the other peoples of Earth, to be able to communicate ideas. And yet language can be very slippery, especially we've noticed in recent years, you know, that truth language is very dependent on how it's received. And so when you come and you share these gifts of forgiveness, of healing, of unity, of hope, Everybody in this room is bringing a lifetime of experience and ideas that we overlay onto those terms. I'm curious for you within your intimate community. I don't know if you have children or grandchildren or kind of the intimate community that you're a part of. Are there specific practices or ways that you go about teaching what spirit meant by those terms when they were gifted to the elders?
Yeah. Oh, that's a big question because there's so many different ways. I'll just share what I do. That getting up in the morning and greeting the sun, when people go, you're crazy. It's really early sometimes. But when you realize you are part of something, it's easy to forget. That's why I get up. It's not just a practice. I want to remember. And when I see that, and especially when I can't see the sun because it's snowing, raining, cloudy, but just because I can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And so that kind of thing is what helps. My grandmother, before everything she was making, she would say these words. She would say, I didn't actually know what she was saying because she was speaking Nahua, but I could tell it was a blessing, everything. And then when she taught us about how we are nature, I think this is a part when I'm going to share this story, if I can, really quickly. So some weekends we go and stay with my grandmother, my younger sister, my older sister. And I remember this when I was probably five or something like that. And she told us the next day we're going to get up in the dark and we're going to go out to the garden, and 5 minutes every hour we are to be silent. And we loved Grandma, so we'd do whatever she said. So we got up, we went out, stood by her garden, and we stayed there for 5 minutes. And we realized we were just moving a little bit. Every hour, she took us back, quiet, whatever we were doing. And you can imagine what we did all day long. We turned and faced the sun. And then I didn't want to go to lunch because I thought this was so great, but we had to go to lunch. And then we turned some more. And it became dark. And she said, okay, now we have to go in and eat. And so all of us thought, this is really cool. We're like a sunflower. We are a sunflower. So we go in and eat. And then she grabs a flashlight, doesn't turn it on, and says, okay, now we're going back out. I thought, Grandma's lost it. I'm tired. She's taking us out there again. So we go out. And she doesn't turn on the flashlight. We're going out. And then she goes, shh. And then she turns on the flashlight toward the ground. And we're in circle with each other. But she points to the sunflowers. And they're looking at each other. When you remember you are light, it doesn't mean, I agree with him. Pain is pain. And that's horrible. It wasn't nice that man said that to me. I've had a lot worse said, but what's wonderful for me is I got to be who I want to be and say, I don't know. And he stayed and actually did a great job. Yeah, so did I. But there's no reason to make enemies, separation, separation, separation. And I created a lot of my own hell. I don't want that. I'm going to have a tough time. So I don't believe anybody says, oh, I got all the answers and you'll be... Nah. We're human in spirit world and there'll be ups and downs, but there's not spiraling downward and downward and downward. And that's what I see happening. And that, I think, is what spirit was, why they gave this prophecy to these elders for everybody. Thank you.
Anyone else? One thing I'll note as I listen, every time you said remembering and described how you remember, it was never a mental act.
Heart.
It was heart. Like a, you went and did something. You went outside. You went and saw the sun, right? And so I'm lodging that in my brain, that remembering is an action, not a thinking. Please.
Will you please spell Pachamama?
Yes. Pachamama is P A P-A-C-H-A-M-A-M-A, Pachamama, the sacred presence of the earth, sky, universe, and all time. And that's what we're part of. Yeah. And I want to say, because you were asking about what can you do, when I had you receive in the best ceremonial way I could, with not having fire and all the other things, I asked you first, listen with the softest part of your ears and expanding heart. I didn't say listen from your brain. I asked you. I think a lot of you did that. You listen, so it went in and was like, maybe even startled yourself, like, God, that really meant something to me. When we listen with the softest part of our ear and expanding heart, I believe we learn a whole lot more and have a whole lot more positive use of our power. We can choose that.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Anita, for being here today. Your story is incredibly empowering, especially as a woman of color, that today I felt such a strong connection to you and your spirit, and I really honor that. So I just wanted to share that with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would love to know, also as well as an artist myself and a filmmaker, so I can relate to the work that you're doing, in this time that we are in this political climate, just how you're currently navigating in your work. Do you see kind of as much of the speaking engagements or in corporate settings or just in the work that you do, kind of a not as much of a demand or need currently? How would you say that you're navigating that?
Yes.
Okay. And then sort of what is next for you?
So in February, when DEI was pronounced bad stuff and you'd lose your federal money, all my clients left, all my paying clients. I have a lot of people I work with. But were the ones that pay the mortgage, they all dropped because they didn't want to lose their money. I understand that. What I am finding now is I don't have a plan, but I'm trusting. Another thing I've done for 20 years is I stand there in front of that sun and just go and look at the seeds of light and breathe it in, and like I'm breathing in trust in the great mystery. And I will say, who's calling me are communities like this who are struggling. They want to be a community, but what I also see in a lot of places is fear, really big fear. And fear is real, but we were taught always, you feel fear, look at it, put it in your hand, so you've got to give it form, and then you decide, you choose. And mostly what I've chosen since I was little is, okay, walk with me, or I give it to my sister. Say, you take care of it, I got to go do this. And she would. I know it sounds silly, but it makes a difference. Giving it form, giving it shape, so it doesn't control you. Because so many people are so afraid. So who's calling me? Places like this, women's groups, men's groups. Some people who are in corporations, but the corporation's not doing their calling. And the other place, more than ever, are scientists. Some scientists are partnering, especially quantum physicists, biologists, are partnering with indigenous people because they know in their findings, you guys already knew this. You didn't use those words, but how did you know this? Everything from microorganisms and all the connection all the way up to you can talk to the trees, you can listen to the trees, and they're learning that. So I'm excited about that because in my corporate work, it was easier to get the people to listen if I could say heart math. So right now, we're changing everybody's heart rate variability. And if we had the instrument I'd put on and you could see, we have that much power, as much 12, 14, 15 feet out, we can change your heart. Fear changes it the most rapidly of anything. Calmness is the second thing. So what's for me is trusting the great mystery and inviting all my relations to come with me to bring calm, to dampen that fear. That's what's up.
Anyone else? I'm going to invite Chris DeBlay up. He's going to close us out tonight. Thank you, Christopher.
Just don't stand under a speaker. Got it. Okay, not under a speaker. Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Chris DeBlay, and I have the privilege of serving on the Still Processing Board. And I do want to say thank you. You helped me remember tonight that I'm connected to you, even though I do not know you. And to us, I'm connected to each of you and to everything. I'm very grateful for that. Thank you. And I think these conversations that we are having here are meant to help each of us live with greater clarity and courage in a world that is in the midst of great upheaval. And I'm feeling that tonight that's happened to me. Something's happened to me, and I have greater clarity and maybe a little bit more courage to live in this world differently. And my invitation to you, as Still Processing enters a new chapter, if you're on our email list or if you're subscribed to Josh's Substack, you already have caught wind of this, but we're really entering a new chapter where we're investing more in the role that Josh has been giving to this organization, which means that we're going to be doing more in the coming year than we've ever done before, trying to offer more opportunities for all of us to connect to really incredible people and to really important ideas. And so my invitation, guess what? I'm a board member, and I'm about to ask you for money, or I'm about to ask you at least to think about this. Because I do think that in this really crazy world, one thing we all can be thinking about, of course, is how can we use the resources we have to support organizations that are helping us live with greater clarity and courage? And if on your drive home tonight you think to yourself, well, Still Processing does that for me, then I would just invite you to ask also, is there a way for you to support us? Let me be very clear. I don't know if I'm supposed to say this as a board member, but you, whether or not you ever give a dime to us, you belong here, you are welcome, period. But if you have something that you are able to give, my invitation is to have you just consider what that might be, big or small, one time, recurring, it all matters and helps move us forward. So there's my pitch. Thank you for being here. It's helped make me better tonight. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Yes, please. And I want to say before you finish, I just want to say there are pieces of paper that show you how you can give both to Still Processing and to Anita Sanchez's work, both of which I assume you now know are very worthy of your hard-earned money. But please.
So what I wanted to say, how you can learn more is read the book, those of you bought it. But even if you didn't buy the book, go to foursacredgifts.com, F-O-U-R, sacredgifts.com. And you can get the song that goes with my book. It's beautiful. I hear it all over the place. It's amazing. And you can learn more about what's available to you. And all of us, I just want to encourage you, one of the things I hear in places I go is, I can't give my money because I have to protect it. And I would say, if that's true, then some of the best protection is to learn, to grow, to use the four gifts. So Still Processing are my things of how you can help me go and speak places, and it all makes a difference. And send the light. Just
let's thank Dr. Sanchez for being here with us. Thank you.